Gillette Public Access Television presents North by Northeast, a news magazine about Northeast Wyoming.
Hello, I'm here with Gillette Mayor John Opseth, and we're here today to talk about the Northeast Wyoming Congressional Fact-Finding Tour, which actually is a Northeast Wyoming Municipal Leaders Group that kind of hosts this or puts this together. We actually just had a fact-finding tour just August 19th through the 22nd, and I believe this is our third one since 2011 that we've kind of been a part of.
That's correct.
Okay. And I guess, John, if you can talk a little bit about what is this tour and who's all involved?
This particular tour was put together to bring Washington, D.C. staffers and committee members out here to see Wyoming for what it really is and see the coal mines and the oil production and gas and uranium, and all the Northeast cities and counties got together, pitched in some money to bring these people out here to show off what we have to offer.
And it's been, I mean, obviously, like I said, this is our third year doing it, so it's been very successful. I think we usually have between 15 and 20 congressional staffers come in for this tour. And talk a little bit about, I guess, what do they get to see while they're on the tour, and kind of talk a little bit about what they do.
The highlights this time, they flew into Casper, and then I believe they went to a uranium mine. They got to stay at the Wagon Hound Ranch and, okay, and see what that's all about. The next day, they toured Douglas for a bit and did get to see a modern-day drilling rig.
Okay.
And from there, they went north the next day to Wright, Wyoming. We toured Black Thunder Coal Mine, which is the largest coal mine in North America.
Wow.
Then we went to the Buffalo Ranch and took the bus out in the middle of a herd of 2,500 buffalo, and everybody got out and watched the buffalo. That was quite an experience for everybody.
Yeah.
And I believe the next day was a trip to KC and Buffalo, the Chris Ledoux Museum in KC,
okay,
and the park there, which was a really nice place to see, and thanks to Mayor Tom Knapp. And then we went to Buffalo, and Mayor Randy Dice was there, and we went up on the mountain to Paradise Dude Ranch.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And then down to the dam that Buffalo owns for their city water, future city water.
Hmm.
And then we toured the wool plant.
Wow.
And Mine Right, which does a lot of work for the local coal mines.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, I departed them, and Mayor Dice took off with them to Sheridan. And I wasn't involved with the Sheridan part of it. But the following day, they came back to Gillette, and we toured the Dry Fork Power Plant, and they got to see the rec center, which everybody was pretty impressed with everything they got to see on the whole tour.
I bet. And that's one thing I think, when you're out on the tour and things, it's amazing to see, obviously, the industry side with mines and things, but also being able to see the local businesses and that, like the wool industry, might not so much have much to do with the energy industry, but they can cohabitate. Or the Durham Ranch. I mean, you have all these buffalo, 2,500 you said, but just down the road there's a few oil rigs and things
right,
like that. So I think it's really good that they can see that.
Yeah, it was good for them to see a wide range of everything we have here to offer in Wyoming. Mm-hmm.
And I guess, I think we're going to continue these tours and things like that. What do you really hope this accomplishes, though? What would you like to see this really do?
Well, our main goal is to bring these people out here and get rid of any false impressions they have of what Wyoming and coal and energy and our part of the country is all about. And we didn't bring anybody out here to plant any ideas in their head. We just wanted to show them the facts, what we had, and let them form their own opinions. And I heard a lot of people say they were really impressed and saw stuff they didn't think they were going to see. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good. It's a very educational tour, I would say.
It is.
So, John, is there anything else you'd like to kind of say about the tour? Like I said, I'm sure some more will be coming our way and things. But
I'd just like to say I'd like to thank everybody that was involved.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many names, I can't say them all, but there was a lot of people involved. And it went very well, and I hope they all come back and they tell their friends what they saw here. And I even had one gentleman ask me if we cleaned up the town before we got to town with the bus, because he had heard how dirty everything was around the coal mines.
So oh, wow.
I was pretty impressed with that. So
very neat. Well, John, thank you very much for joining me.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Coming up on North by Northeast, a look at the Wyoming Lottery.
Hi, we are here at Mountain Meadow Wool Mill, and I am with Karen Hostetler. She's the co-founder of Mountain Meadow Wool Mill. So to start with, why don't you tell us the difference between why is it a wool mill and not, as what most people hear, is a woolen mill?
Well, a wool mill is, we take wool and we process it into yarn, but we are not a woolen spinning system.
Okay.
So there's a difference between a woolen spinning system and a worsted spinning system or a semi-worsted spinning system, and all that is how the yarn itself looks when it's finished.
Okay.
And how it's spun. So it's a difference in equipment. So woolen system has a few less pieces of equipment. We have a few more because we're a semi-worsted or a worsted spinning mill.
Okay, thank you. Next, let's talk about how did you decide to start a wool mill?
It's kind of a fun story, actually. It started about 10 years ago. Valerie Spanos, who is my business partner, we had been good friends, raising our children together, and we were looking at what we were going to do when our children were kind of gone and grown up, and wool was an interest that both of us had. We thought more about doing a little toy store than a woolen mill, but as we got started looking at it, we wanted to do something that would help the ag community in Wyoming. And there is no wool mills in Wyoming, but there's a lot of sheep.
Yes, there are.
We hauled a bale of wool all the way to Canada, and took us about 10 months, and we finally got some yarn back. And we fell in love with that whole idea of actually creating some manufacturing in Wyoming, based on the ag business. So it just set a ball in motion that just got bigger and bigger and bigger.
A whole ball of yarn.
Yeah, whole ball of yarn. And it just kept growing.
Excellent. Yeah. So now that you've started, you start on a small scale, or how did you, or was it from the beginning you had to start on the scale that you have right now?
Well, for the first several years, we basically were doing some grant writing, and that we did it on our kitchen tables. We did some washing of wool and some dyeing of wool in a neighbor's barn.
Oh, wow.
But then we wrote our second grant, and that was where you actually put your idea into motion. And we knew we needed to start buying equipment. So we spent about 6 months looking for places, buildings that would work, and started looking for equipment. That was in 2007. So this mill itself opened its doors in September of 2007.
Okay, and you have a, how do you, obviously we have several of your products right behind us here. How do you market what you sell? Is it outside of this, do you sell wholesale to distributors? Do you sell it to clothing stores, retail,
yeah.
How do you?
Well, we started off just targeting the hand knitting market. It was a niche that we knew that, this was in 2007, and that market was booming. There were a lot of knitters. It was a resurgence of that craft. We started going to trade shows that target those people and those shops. So those were our first customers. They were knitting shops around the country. We still have a lot of those customers, and we still do target knitting. Of course, you see all the yarn behind us. Or crocheting or anything in that handcrafting industry. But we are also now doing custom spinning for bigger businesses where they send us, you know, specifications of the yarn that they need for whatever product is they're making. Some of them are dyers, big dyer companies. Some are clothing companies. Some are just knitting designers who want their own yarn line.
Okay.
So we are becoming, we're doing more business to business than we did in the first steps of our process. We also do custom processing for small ranches, for small farmers. If they have, you know, a flock of 10, say, Shetland sheep, we'll process that and give them their yarn back. So that's another part of our business.
Are all of the wool suppliers, are they local to the area around Buffalo and Johnson County, or where are you getting your supplies from?
We get our supplies, a lot of it is local. We have several ranchers who really believed in the whole idea of the wool mill, and they were our first big supporters, and that's where we got most of our wool in the beginning, and they still are major suppliers. We also get some from other areas of Wyoming. We do get black wool and fleeces from Montana. We get another breed, a Lincoln breed, from California. So we do pick and choose a little bit depending on what product we need it for.
Oh, okay.
But we mostly target, most of our wool is just Wyoming.
And as I understand, you also have buffalo here?
Yes, we have buffalo here. We started with a yarn called, we call it Mountain Down, because if we called it buffalo, it would confuse it, because all of our yarns have a name of a town in Wyoming. We didn't want to name it after buffalo. Anyway, it's called Mountain Down.
Okay.
And it's the, we get the yarn, the fiber from the Durham Ranch south of Gillette. And the guys will go out when they're vaccinating the buffalo, the yearlings, and just brush really fast right behind the head. And we get a whole day, probably 20 pounds of down. We also have buffalo that we've done for, washed and dried for a company called Buffalo Gold, which has all the coarse fibers in it, and it has to all be dehaired.
Oh, okay.
But that was a big project we did for somebody else. But yes, we do have buffalo here.
We will have more from Mountain Meadow Wool in our next episode, when Valerie Spanos will walk us through the wool making process. Here's a look at this week's community calendar. The Sundance Beer Festival is happening September 13th in downtown Sundance. It's a fun event and starts at noon and goes till 5. There will be vendors, bouncy castles, face painting, Strider race, music, and delicious craft beer. Brewers from Wyoming, Montana, and Western South Dakota will be featured. For more information, go to sundancebeerfestival.com. Fur Kids Foundation will be hosting their Petapalooza going on Saturday, September 13th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Camplex Park, shelter number 5. This all-day pet festival features several pet-focused events and contests, pet-related products and services, and more. For more information, visit furkidsfoundation.org. Wyoming Pilots for Christ will be hosting their 7th annual golf ball drop on Saturday, September 13th as well, from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Bell Knob Golf Course in Gillette. For more information, visit pilotsforchrist-wy.org. Later on North by Northeast.
Yes, we're celebrating today our 40th anniversary, as you said.
This week's featured pets come to us from the Sheridan Dog and Cat Shelter. We have Steve, a 2-year-old neutered cat. Steve would do best in a home with no other animals, adults, and only older children. We also have Colton, a 2-year-old boxer and lab mix. He gets along okay with other dogs, but would do best in a home with no cats. He is housebroken. To adopt either of these pets or for more information, you can contact the shelter at 307-674-7694, or you can visit petfinder.com, and please adopt a pet.
Right now we are sitting in the entryway to the Occidental Hotel in Buffalo, Wyoming. And I'm sitting here with David Stewart. He is the proprietor of this establishment and a few that are adjacent to it as well. Why don't you tell us what your entire complex encompasses?
Well, we have the Occidental Saloon here that was founded in 1880 by the Buell family. And with that we have the Occidental Hotel, the Occidental Saloon, the Virginian restaurant, and also the Busy Bee Cafe next door. So we have four businesses here on this block.
Okay, well let's start with the hotel itself. What are some of the, I know there are many, but some of the main features here that people come to look for when they come by to visit?
Well, we have 17 suites here. When this building was built, this was built in 1908 after the original structure that you see in the log structure up here was torn down. A gentleman by the name of Owen Quick built this establishment. He thought the railroad was coming through here. He got in a little financial trouble and lost it in a poker game in 1913.
I get this.
To J.R. Smith, and J.R. asked his daughter-in-law to run it for a couple of years, and she wound up staying here 59 years. And so it had 60 rooms at that time, and now we have 17 rooms. So we've taken rooms and made suites out of them.
Okay.
So people can stay in the suites here. We have the dining next door in the Virginian restaurant. We have the Occidental Saloon next door, which is a 1908 saloon with a beautiful 1908 back bar. And then we've refurbished the Busy Bee that was next door. It had been torn down, and so now it's refurbished. As you see on the Longmire series, they talk about the Busy Bee, so we brought it back to life 4 years ago.
So tell us a little bit about the Virginian restaurant. Where did its name come from, and why is that significant to this area?
Well, one of the patrons years ago that stayed in the Occidental Hotel was Owen Wister, who wrote the Virginian. Mm-hmm. And he wrote part of the Virginian here in the upstairs here, and so we named our Virginian restaurant after Owen Wister, and we also have an Owen Wister suite upstairs, which is a favorite of many people. They like to stay in that. It's got a little balcony mm-hmm. where people come and sit and overlook the street. So that's the way the Virginian, you know, in the early days, they used to have a slogan here that said the Occidental Hotel and Saloon was where the Virginian got his man. So we decided to name our restaurant the Virginian when we refurbished it. And which part of the Virginian used to be the old bank and the mercantile store. The bank was built first in 1903 on the other end and came this way. And so that's why you see different stages of the building, you know, the brick building. Mm-hmm. You know, the walls in between are like 18 inches thick. So it's a very, very old historical piece. But that's where the Virginian's name came from. And the word Occidental, I know you're going to ask me that, so I'm going to just go ahead and tell you. Occidental means to the west. To go west or to the west, okay. It's the opposite of Oriental. And Charles Buell came from Wisconsin when he came to the west here. So he came from the east and he was going west, so he decided to name the establishment the Occidental. If you were in the England in the early days, if you went to the Orient, you went to the east. If you went to the Occident, you went to the west. So that's where the word came from.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Learn something new every day. Now, you get people here from all over the world.
All over the world. In the summertime, we have probably 75% of our clientele is from Europe. You know, they come from France, Germany, England, Austria, Australia, oh gosh, France, just Holland, just about anywhere you can think of. They come from here to the west to visit the Occidental. We, about 8.5 years ago, I started a bluegrass, an old-time fiddle jam mm-hmm. In the saloon, and it really took off, and it's so busy every week, and that's kind of what got the Occidental really flourishing and got people coming, and we had a gentleman last year that came all the way from France to play harmonica with us.
Oh, wow.
And so it's got to be known worldwide. And of course, you know, the whole new Longmire series mm-hmm. has not hurt us at all. I mean, it's helped us a tremendous amount. You know,
yeah.
Craig Johnson's from this area, and he wrote those series, and that's the biggest thing on A&E right now, so it's really been a great, great thing for us. Yeah.
So back to your bluegrass performances that you have. What nights are those?
It's Thursday night. We do a bluegrass jam every Thursday night, have for the last 8.5 years. It's year-round. We have people that come from all over, like I say, to do that, and we have locals. We have 10 to 12 musicians on stage.
Why don't you let us know who a few of those musicians are?
Well,
give them a little credit.
You bet. Lynn Young is one of my anchors, Charlie Fernicase, Doug Brothers, Don Conklin. One of them that passed away was Dan Carlott, and Dan was a great fiddle player. And because of Dan, we started a scholarship fund. And that scholarship fund has been going on now for the last 4 years. In his name, it's called the Occidental Dan Carlott and Occidental Jam Scholarship Fund. And we've given away 5 scholarships to date, I believe, and usually they're right around $3,000 for students who are going to school. We don't care where they go to school, mm-hmm. but they have to major or minor in music. And so we just gave one away last week to Hannah Danielson, and she came, and one of the requirements is they come and perform here at the Occidental. She put on a wonderful performance last week, and she was awarded her scholarship, and she'll be going to school this fall, so starting school. So we've given away 5 of those. We also passed a little can about this big around, a little white can around every week, and people throw a dollar or two in there, and that money goes to needy folks in the community. And in the last 8.5 years, that little can has held over $100,000.
Wow.
That has been given to needy folks in the community. So it's much more than just a music jam. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful neighborhood thing, and the folks just give and give and give, and it's just a great time. They come, it's always packed on Thursday nights. You can hardly get in sometimes.
So that was going to be my next question. It's like, if I'm going to come to that, what time do I need to be here to make sure I get a good seat?
It starts at 7, straight up. Sometimes we do early music just to do a little sound check and give the people a little early music while they're eating. But really, to get a good seat, you got to be here by 5, 2 hours ahead of time.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very, very much for joining us, and good luck with everything here.
Thank
and
you.
Hope to see you on a Thursday sometime.
Thank you for
thank
coming.
Thank you very much.
The lottery came to Wyoming on August 24th, and now residents in Wyoming or people just traveling through can purchase tickets for the Powerball and Mega Millions. The first ticket purchase was by Mary Ogg, who was randomly chosen from more than 27,000 entrants in a giveaway the lottery created to promote its upcoming launch. All signs so far point to a successful launch. According to WyoLotto.com, lottery sales on the first day totaled $198,612. The Wyoming Lottery Corporation reported $1,000 in sales per minute for the first hour of ticket sales. The county with the most in sales was Natrona County with $36,450. Campbell County finished fourth, with Sheridan County finishing seventh in sales. According to WyoLotto.com, there have been 4,889 winners for Wyoming's first Mega Millions drawing, totaling $21,028 in gifts, and 2,805 winners for the Powerball drawing, totaling $25,009 in gifts. According to Wyoming Lottery CEO John Klontz, the support for the lottery has been tremendous and sales are going well. If you'd like to be a part of the Wyoming Lottery, you can go to WyoLotto.com and find a retailer near you. The past came alive at the Rockpile Museum as they hosted their 40th anniversary celebration. On August 16th, the Campbell County Rockpile Museum celebrated in a big way by having different demonstrations and hands-on activities for the whole family. Gino Palazzari had the opportunity to talk with Registrar Robert Henning about the celebration and the history of the museum itself.
Hi, I'm here with Robert Henning. He's a registrar here at the Campbell County Rockpile Museum, and today is their 40th anniversary celebration. So Robert, why don't you tell us a little bit about what's going on today?
Yes, we're celebrating today our 40th anniversary, as you said. The museum opened July 21st, 1974, and so we're about a month late celebrating, but this date was the best for us. And what we're doing today is we're taking the opportunity to celebrate, really bring people and let them have fun and let them discover new and interesting things. So what we have today, we've had dance and music, we've had demonstrations from a steam tractor, blacksmith wagon camp that would have been on the Oregon Trail, and some wagon rides. And that is all taking place down below next to the fire department. Up here we have more hands-on demonstrations, leather craft.
That's the pounding that we're hearing in the background.
Yes, the pounding that you're hearing is they're making fun keychains for themselves and for their family. We've got a cow that you can milk, not the real thing, unfortunately. But and then some rope making and spinning and weaving as well.
So this is quite the celebration. I mean, it's not only up on the top, but it's also down on the main, or down by the fire department as well. And there's all sorts of hands-on things going on, including some chimes that are next to us too. How long have you guys been working on putting this together?
Well, the ideas for it really came, the early idea to celebrate was probably 2 years ago. And then last year, probably about this time, we started coming up with ideas of what things we wanted to show people and what things we'd want to have them do for hands-on. It all culminated today, and everything has gone pretty smoothly. So,
excellent. So we've talked a little bit about what you've got going on today and celebrating the history of the Rockpile Museum. What's coming up in the future?
Well, first with that history, we have an exhibit that will be up for 3 months. It opened this past week, and it is about our own history. It's about the history of the Rockpile behind us, the history of the early museums in Campbell County, and then our founding in 74. And some of our interesting changes over those years. This fall, we're having the raptors from the Yellowstone, well, I believe it's called the Draper Museum Raptor Experience now from Cody.
They were here a couple years ago, very popular. So they'll have the Golden Eagle that's from Campbell County with them this time, which wasn't here last time. And then this fall, we also have a new exhibit about Scots in Wyoming, the Scot people that came from Scotland. We'll have a section on Scots in Campbell County. We have some pretty prominent families that were here. And then our Winter Family Day series will start again. And we don't have exactly the plans, but look for it on our website, rockpilemuseum.com, for more information on the family days.
Excellent. And if I'm not mistaken, we're looking at maybe updating the museum here in the next couple of years?
Yes, the commissioners and the Public Works Office at the courthouse are have hired an architect, and they're going to do some initial work to try and figure out how to expand or build a new building here on this site. So we're excited about that. We have done some initial planning of what kind of space we need for exhibits, for collection storage, and then just basic parking needs, infrastructure needs. So we're excited about that, and we're hoping that the people will get involved and tell us what they'd like to see in their museum.
Excellent. And why don't you tell us, okay, what are the museum's regular hours?
We're open 9 to 5, Monday through Saturday. And we do have some evening events. Again, look for those on our website. Usually special events, speakers, book signings, things like that. But 9 to 5, Monday through Saturday is our normal hours.